Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to talk to you about RotoBaller.com, proud sponsor of the show. Do my written content over at RotoBaller.com, and this podcast is a part of the RotoBaller Radio Network. So I want to let you know that football season quickly approaching with you guys. Win big in 2021 with RotoBaller.com's NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? RotoBaller's NFL Premium Pass and Draft Kit include rankings, projections, and cheat sheets for all formats. Get exclusive draft articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chats. Join in on the winning and take 50% off any Premium Pass. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% discount. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 415. We're going to talk some late-round relievers. We're not talking like 26th-round relievers. We're talking late-round relievers for your draft champions drafts, for those that are in those 50-round drafts. So you know you got to dig deep, but they'll help you win some leagues because there's so many people, and we'll talk about that, they get saves each year. So you can check me out on Twitter at BDIntric, and my guest, for the second time on Benched with Bubba. You can find his great work over at rotowire.com. He handles all the bullpen charts, continually updating that, and it's pretty, pretty awesome stuff he's got going on over there. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Roof, R-U-F-E. Ryan, how we doing, man?
Doing good. I thought I got elevated to co-host for a minute. I'm kicking Toby out or something.
You almost got it. You almost got it. It's Tuesday, so my brain was just like, I got my co-host here. You know,
well, it's early might for happen. You, so you get a pass. That's fine.
I appreciate it. It is early. It is early. I have a half a cup of coffee in. So it is early, but I like doing this. We're going to bang it out like I kind of hinted at. We're going to go over each team and go over relievers. But before we do that, let everybody know what you have going on at RotoWire and where they can find it, all the good stuff.
Yeah, rotowire.com. Right now I'm working on some player outlooks for next season, mostly focusing on relievers. So just hammered out about 50 of those. So I'm excited for those right now, and really excited for our new changes to the RotoWire closers page. We did a lot of kind of upgrades just to make the page a little bit cleaner, a little bit more information on the page, and just kind of streamline some of the information that is available to the subscribers. So highly recommend you check that out. Obviously, we weren't planning on, this wasn't really something planned. It was just something I kind of brought up to, you know, Clay and James and the MLB team at RotoWire. And it was just like, hey, what do you guys think about, you know, changing the format of the page a little bit? You know, there's certain information I dig into when I'm looking at closers. I really look at kind of like their most recent performance to, you know, have they pitched three out of last four games, things like that. Can we display that on the page? You know, and I was clicking around a little bit through the site just to get some information. So, you know, this presents a uniform look for closers, a lot of relevant stats. You can just, you know, sort real easily in terms of save leaders, ERA, swing strike percentage, ground ball percentage, things like that, just right at your fingertips. So I'm really excited about that. And it's just a little bit cleaner look. So,
Yeah, no, it's awesome what you guys continue to do over there, what you do on this chart, because I know we talked about it last time. It's just insane how much is constantly changing in the landscape of relievers. And I think you probably know the number much better than I. It was some astronomical number of like how many people got saves last year and were like relevant as closers. That's kind of why this is kind of a fun podcast for our deeper league knowledge. But can you kind of just elaborate to the listeners how like crazy it was in the closing landscape?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Really aligned with 2019's kind of uptick in more relievers getting saves. 2019, there were 199 pitchers who recorded at least one save. And last year there was 198 relievers, unique relievers. We're not double counting the guys like Hansel Robles who switched teams and got saves for both teams. But if we do that, we're at 205 pitchers who have recorded at least one save. So it's really just more teams are just going to committees or being more flexible with their high leverage relievers. And, you know, however it works out for the ninth, that's you know, that's how it falls. So, yeah, we're really seeing a lot more relievers get saves, and I expect that trend to continue.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it really does continue. And obviously, we know some teams do it more so than others, but pretty much every team, you tweeted out an awesome tweet. It was, I think it was like seven closers or something got like the majority of their team. Everybody else was like so much spread out and stuff. And even Kenley Jansen was like a questionable one because, you know, all these guys got so many, but in the end, he was the guy. Like, we can admit that he was the guy. But there were so many, and Chapman as well, there were so many just wild scenarios last year. So finding these late relievers can be good. And some will go before round 27. I was like being sarcastic. Some of these like elite kind of closer twos on teams are going to go early. But people know what I'm talking about when we kind of get into this whole gamut. And that's why we'll go team by team. So we'll still highlight those guys, but we'll give you some guys you might be able to target later in your draft potentially as well. Before we go into that, I know you are in a draft champions. Are you? Did you finish it yet, or are you still in that one?
Yeah, we finished it. Okay. I'm wrapping up an NFBC 52, which is similar, but instead of 15 teams, it's a 12 team league. So,
yeah, I love those NFBC 50s just because it's still like what I love doing the early drafts. Is that's why I usually don't dig into like the DCs and stuff till later. Is it's all about getting the feel for the player pool. So the $50 price point works out well. Yes, it's 12 teams, not 15. So it does change things a bit, but it still kind of gets the juices flowing, gets the mind working in the right way. What have you noticed in like these early drafts when it comes to the closing market, relieving market out there?
Yeah, certainly the elite relievers are getting pushed up. Saw Liam Hendricks get drafted as soon as pick 15 or 16, right there at the 1-2 turn, which is you know, a pretty big push. And is it unreasonable? No. I mean, saves are at a premium. I mean, they're one of the categories, and Hendricks really does provide, you know, five categories, you know, performance. He had 8 wins last year in addition to his 30 some saves and elite ratios and high strikeout totals. So, is it what I would do? No. I'm going to still try to get a secure closer if I can, but you know, I'll probably, you know, target one in the round 5-6 range with the Diaz and Class A Presley types. It's really interesting, especially with these early drafts. You know, I've seen Blake Treinen go super high right now because Jansen's unsigned, and you know, if he doesn't sign with the Dodgers, Treinen's probably the guy, right? So I've seen him go super early. It's just kind of crazy how things are shaking out right now. You know, and it's right now it's a lot of risk reward, right? Like Gallegos is going super early. Love him as a pitcher. Think he could be like awesome as a closer, but you know, what if they sign Melanson or somebody? You know what I mean? Like it's a lot of risk reward right now. So getting those guys who have been established for a while, Chapman, Jansen, you know, Presley, those are guys I'm really targeting right now. I think they're all really great values right now.
Yeah. A couple things there. It is that is part of the perks of doing these early drafts is you can find value or get kind of guys at different times and everything. And that's also the downfalls that could backfire, or you could, I get, that was the joke I made in a lot of the early drafts I did last year. I got at least one guy on every team that didn't even sign, like a rip, yeah. Like it was insane that I just had an empty roster spot for the entire season. But that's kind of the risks you take on these early drafts. And initially when I saw the Liam Hendricks, I'm like, that's crazy. Like you said, his stats are great. It's not what I would do because my mind, I guess, isn't just built to do that. And I'd rather take my chances elsewhere. But especially in like a draft champions where you have no waiver wire to make changes and there's an overall championship, you need to lock in saves. Like it's that simple. Yeah. So it definitely changes kind of your approach on thing. We'll see like in a redraft format with waivers and everything, how that or fab budget, see how that would play out. Maybe he goes a couple rounds later or something. We'll see. But I could see the appeal to, you know, you're getting 40 plus saves right there, unless barring an injury, which you can't predict. So you're getting like really, really good stuff there, which makes a ton of sense in that regard. And in the draft champions, I started the one in first pitch Arizona. We had the first 30 rounds, I think, or 27 rounds or something. And closers were just going so fast. This podcast is built for me. Let's put it that way. Cause I'm going to have to find a lot of late targets to kind of make things happen because I my brain wasn't ready to take guys as early as they were going. I just couldn't do it. Right. It's crazy.
Yeah, but, and to touch on one thing you covered there, the format, you know, being a DC, you don't get to pick anyone up, right? That's, you know, going to change my approach as compared to a fab league. You know, in a fab league, I'm going to probably wait on saves and play the waiver wire, just, you know, covering bullpens for RotoWire, you know, I'm more deeply into that than probably the average player. So I'm going to be more comfortable speculating on guys for a dollar or two, you know, ahead of, you know, I notice somebody who's, you know, struggling or beginning to struggle. I'm going to speculate on, you know, probably the next man up.
Yeah.
No, whereas the DC, you got to lock in those saves. So.
No, that's a great point. Cause that's something that, last year, because every Tuesday night, Toby and I would recap the fab of the week. And I'd be like, how do you spend this much money on a guy that's going to get speculative closes? It's crazy. But the thing is sure, okay, you can find that diamond. Like a couple of years ago, I keep telling the story. I got Liam Hendricks, and that worked out great. That was phenomenal with the A's. Does that happen very often? No. But the way saves are changing so much, as you mentioned, the 198 different closers and everything are individual saves people. You're still getting them later in the year. And we saw it. So, and they're cheaper as the year goes on. Right. So if you don't break the bank early per se, but you start like say mid-season targeting saves, you can still get a boatload of saves for right. A lot cheaper. So you can play it for sure. And like Ryan said, if you follow his charts and others like awesome work out there, you can be ahead of the curve and get a couple like speculative bids in there and try to get guys, and you're not banging on the injury where everyone's going to pay $1 million for someone. You're going to speculate on the guy losing his job, which happens a lot on these teams in baseball these days. So definitely right. An option as well.
Yeah. But you know, another observation from at least the DC I was in this 50 that I'm wrapping up is there are a lot of, you know, save sources after round 30. There's even a lot after round 40. Now are they going to get you 10, 15 saves? Probably not, but I mean, there's still sources there that you can plug in and, you know, get a handful of saves, you know, that can help you, you know, try to get to that overall. So,
yeah. And the beauty of these DCs and everything, it's same with the, I guess the fab leagues, but more so in the DCs, cause you're just locked into that roster. There's weeks you can be like, you know what, I'm just going to start one starting pitcher. I'm going to start eight of these guys and try to rack up saves in 1 week because it's just the matchups are different or you're not able to like pick up a two pitch streamer off the wire. And like, I don't want to use this guy this week because of the matchup. So I'm going to go use another guy that could give me a save or two and see how that goes. So having that kind of depth with guys that might not get a bunch of saves, but that potential for saves could pay off as well. So it's definitely different
angles. And one thing to remember is when you dive into these DCs or 50s or whatever, just because a guy spent time in the closer role in 2021 and got saves doesn't mean they're primed for the closer role in 2022. So guys like Yimi Garcia or Richard Rodriguez, Andrew Chafin, these guys were, you know, great save sources last year. But, you know, I'm seeing some of these guys go like way earlier than some better relievers, you know, higher strikeout upside. And I don't know, that's not, you know, maybe they fall into saves again. You know, they proved they can obviously pitch in high leverage, but, you know, are they favorable to land a closing job? Probably not. So just something to remember, just when you're trying to decide between some different relievers for saves, you know, don't just take Yimmy Garcia because he got 15 saves last year. Look a little bit deeper. Notice that when he went to the Astros, he was in kind of a middle relief role. And that's probably, you know, on a good team, that's, you know, that's where he's that's what his role is going to be. So,
yeah, no, he got those saves because the Marlins. That's what we got to say. So, yeah, for sure. When you're looking, before we get into the teams here, you mentioned something like the strikeouts and everything. When you're looking at these later targets, what helps you differentiate between guys, you, besides obviously the work you've done to see where their roles are potentially and whatnot? Like you mentioned Chafin. I know a lot of people love Chafin. You say where he's going in drafts, they love Chafin. We still don't know if he's going to be the closer, but you have guys that might have elite strikeout stuff that could fall into a role, because we've seen that time and time again throughout a season when the roles change and stuff. These are the guys that more often than not fall into it. How do you go about looking for those later round guys?
Yeah, I'm like, if I'm in round 45, I'm probably going to target someone with a higher, you know, help me in ratios and strikeouts if they're not giving me saves. So, top of my head, like Mike Mayers, he's got like at least a 10 K per nine, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to target him over someone like Cody Hoyer, who doesn't strike out as many guys. You know, maybe his path to saves is maybe a little bit better than Mayers, but I don't know. I just, there's other contributions there for Mayers that, you know, are a little bit more advantageous than Hoyer, who could have a 4 ERA and, you know, kind of not get me many strikeouts. So that's kind of a differentiator. I look at the kind of savant pages, see if I'm seeing red, that's, you know, that's obviously a plus. Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking for more overall help, because I was actually one of my draft champions leagues last year. I didn't draft enough pitchers. So I was starting late in the year, Blake Treinen, Corey Knebel, Bruce Dark Great all starting all those guys, because I literally had no healthy pitchers. So I want guys who are going to, you know, help boost me in the categories I need, not just saves.
That's one of the hardest parts about the DCs and these like NFBC 50s and stuff, is just, and when injuries happen, and last year they happened at a ridiculous rate, you were just left holding the bag. I've told the story. I had drafted 3 first basemen in the entire month of September. In one league, I had 0 first basemen on my roster. So it was just like, nothing you can do about it. It's just like, this is the way it goes. But you mentioned not having enough starting pitchers. And I was going to ask you, in a perfect world, in an ideal world, the more you've done these, you probably kind of got a little bit of a program you're trying to uphold for the most part. How many like relief pitchers are you trying to finish a draft with? Or is it just kind of overall pitchers?
Yeah, I think it depends on like the security of my, like, you know, top closers. If I get a Hendricks and a Hader, I'm probably not going to invest as much.
True.
You know, on relievers later on, I'm going to try to get those innings, but generally I land somewhere in the like 6 to 7 range for a 50 round DC. I've been trying to target more pitchers this year. Last year I was in kind of the 21 to 22 range for pitchers. And like I said, that really just kind of bit me. So I've been trying to be in the 23, 24 range, and with 6 or 7 of those as relievers and safe specs. So it's generally where I land. It depends on the security of my first couple closers. Like, you know, if I have some risky guys, I'll probably, you know, spend that 7th or 8th slot on a spec closer late.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense to me. Let's talk about some teams. Let's talk about all the teams, and we'll go through them. And some will be a lot easier than others, but there'll always be some fun ones to chat with. And we'll just go alphabetically like your chart suggests, and we'll start with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I love also what you have on here is just the first thing right here on the main chart, the total saves for a team. The D-backs had 22 saves last year, so it kind of makes you think, were they really worth the you know, investing money in? Now, that could change every year, don't get me wrong. But it just goes to show you that like certain teams are going to get you much more chances than others. But who do you see coming out in this, or who's worth taking a chance on? Because like you have Wendelken is speculated as the closer, and we all know that could change on a moment's notice.
Yeah, and those 22 saves were split between 8 relievers. So, I think the leader had like 4 or something, or 5. Maybe it might have been Soria, actually. I think it was Soria before he got traded. But yeah, I'm looking at 2 guys here in this bullpen, both JBs. You mentioned Wendelken. His ADP is really kind of going around 39, when his highest pick, around 27, pick 402. I don't know. He was DFA'd by Oakland last year. It was strange, considering he's a decent reliever. They're a contending team. Just to get rid of like bullpen depth like that, it was just kind of a weird move. I don't know if it was like an injury, concern or what, but Arizona came in, claimed him mid-August. Pitched a career high, 43 2/3 innings, still pretty young, doesn't give up many homers. I mean, I think he's kind of the favorite for the job just due to the lack of other options right now. Got a couple saves last year, so I think he's the guy to target. And like I said, super late. I mean, if he's the guy, if he's the closer, that's, 15, 20 saves in round 39, that's a good gamble worth taking, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, he's a surprising one to me because going into last season with the A's situation kind of in flux, people thought he was kind of going to be a guy to get saves with the A's. And then he just, like you said, got DFA'd, and it was a weird, weird year for him. But maybe this is the year for him for sure.
Yeah, and the other guy, former first-round pick, J.V. Bukauskas, is one of the guys that came over to Arizona in the Zach Greinke deal. He got demoted last year for inconsistency reasons. A bit of a health risk, too. Just kind of one of those max velocity guys, just throws super hard. Did get a save when he was demoted for AAA Reno, so just someone to keep an eye on, not earlier than your 48th round pick or something like that, but the upside is there if you're looking for it.
Yeah, no, he was a name that a lot of people liked last year, but the inconsistencies were rough, so that'd be definitely a good one to circle later on. Let's go to the World Series champion Braves here. It seems like Will Smith's going to be the guy, but is there anyone else to speculate on there in Atlanta?
The night shift, you gotta, right? Like, it's a pretty cool nickname for like that quartet of elite relievers there. I think, Atlanta was one of those teams that didn't really use many relievers for saves. I think they only had 4 relievers log saves, and it was Smith who logged 90% of them, and the other 3 had 1 apiece. So, if you're going to look at anyone, you can probably look at Luke Jackson, past round 45. He's closed before. He had 31 holds last year, which was 2nd best in the majors. ERA estimators suggest he was a little bit lucky last year, but I don't know. He's done it before. He's obviously one of their highest leverage relievers. So if something happens to Smith, he's injured, whatnot, he would be one that I would look to back Smith up with if I drafted him.
I like it.
Other than him, Matt Seck had a really nice year. He's a little inconsistent. Started the year real well, then kind of lost his control a little bit. But it's kind of fun just seeing him succeed in the playoffs and then just his story. He's got a great, great nickname too, Nutsack.
Yeah, so. Nutsack nickname. His just performance in the postseason was amazing, and then to watch the officers try to arrest him during the parade was one of the funnier things I've ever seen. I was like,
that was fantastic.
It was like, officer, I know he had a great postseason, but who do you think is wearing a Matsick jersey walking up and down the street right now? Like, really? Who? And like, come on. If anybody's got a jersey, it's probably Acuna or Freeman or something else. Let's be realistic about this. For like 2 seconds.
But, yeah, that was hilarious.
It was one of the better videos out there. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Baltimore, to the Orioles, where it's every year it seems to be a head scratcher on what are we doing. One of the places we like to stream closers at because they're always streaming. But is there anybody worth targeting in this bullpen?
Yeah, a couple guys actually going after round 30, Cole Sulcer and Tyler Wells. Sulcer ADP around round 33. He's led the Orioles in saves for 2 straight years. Granted, they were both single digits in both those years. He had an 8 last year. Really nice year for him. He cut his walk rate in half, career high, 63 in the third inning. So, and then Tyler Wells, Rule 5 pick from the Twins, had Tommy John 2019, was one 29% K rate, 5.5% walk rate, 4 saves. A lot of upside there, I think. Thing with the Orioles is, you know, they had one of the lowest save totals like the Diamondbacks did. They only had 26 as a team. And Brandon Hyde likes to use a committee. This is why these guys are going late in DCs, is because you can't really rely on 10 saves from anyone. But these are two guys, they're the favorites for saves in Baltimore's arm barn. So, I mean, after round 30, I mean, I think these guys are nice picks.
Yeah, it's always you never know what's going to happen there. And like, it's interesting. You try to not spend too much on them, but they get saves. And Sulcer's like shown such promise at times that I'd really like to see. And Wells, I think he got a save or two and then got hurt last year. So we'll see.
Yeah, he got 4 saves last year. And then injury mid-September, I think, cut his season short. But
yeah, there was some hype on him towards the end for sure. Let's go to Boston, where Matt Barnes was on the outs towards the end of last year. We saw Whitlock. We saw a lot of we saw Robles, and he's not around anymore. There was all kinds of stuff going on in Boston. So what should we expect potentially as we draft for 2022?
Yeah, with kind of rumors of Whitlock going to the rotation, how just having 2 pitches probably going to remain in kind of this long man, long relief role. Adovino's a free agent. Robles is a free agent. So there's not many guys left. Matt Barnes is the guy right now. So unless they sign or trade for somebody, I think Barnes is the favorite to open 2022 in the role. They signed him to an extension in the middle of last year. He had like a dominant first half. He was so good. So he could be like a huge value if he reverts back to that pre-All-Star break form. His ADP right now is round 19, but he went as low as pick 466, which is round 32. Like that could just be an immense value if you know they don't sign anyone to be their closer. So, it'll be interesting to see if he can get back to that dominant form that he had at the beginning of last year, because he was really good.
So we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on who they sign. That's what it comes down to.
I would imagine they're going to sign a trade for someone. But
yeah, for sure. Because just even looking on the right side of the screen here, the closers and waiting ranks, I'm not going to give those out to everybody. But there's about 7 or 8 guys that are unsigned right now. So that if just one of those guys sneaks into Boston, then that can make things a little interesting, potentially. So
I guess another guy who's been undrafted through at least the 4 DCs that were finished was Hirokazu Sawamura. He had 75 saves in Japan before he came over to the States. Has a nice ground ball rate last year in his rookie season here, but walks and home runs were an issue. So really needs to address those before, you know, he kind of ascends that high leverage ladder. But there's another, you know, high leverage option there if you know they're a little thin on the depth side.
All right, let's go to Wrigley Field. The Chicago Cubs, where everyone was getting traded last year, and that could happen again this year if you're having a good season. So there could be a lot of moving pieces in this bullpen. How do you see this one flushing out for now? Because I know we all wanted Rowan Wick last year when trades happened. Didn't work out quite as planned.
Yeah, they really kind of went full committee after the Kimbrel trade. It was really Kimbrel, and then I think like 9 or 10 more guys got saves the rest of the season in the second half. So I still think Wick's the favorite just because of his strikeout rate. It was near 30%. He led the team with 5 saves after the Kimbrel trade. He just got blown up a little bit. His 14% walk rate was too high. So Hoyer got a couple saves. So Wick's going around round 30. Which could be a great value, but you know, Cubs want to spend. I would imagine they're going to be, you know, players for a closer or high end reliever. Hoyer's ADP is around 40. He got a couple saves after the trade. could get, you know, as the roster stands today, he's one of their highest leverage guys, could step into saves. So, but I would imagine they're going to, you know, there's a lot of moves to make there, you know, considering, you know, a lot of guys left via trade and free agents. So,
yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out. Cause there's, they say they're going to spend now. I have a weird feeling there's some more cast-offs coming their way. So we're going to see how this one plays out. Cincinnati Reds, they say they're selling, so buckle up. But Lucas Sims, you know, we saw Garrett last year. We saw Lorenzen at times last year. We saw
Embry.
Yeah, there's so many of them. So many of them last year. And where do we stand right now?
So, believe it or not, Cincinnati is this is the most exciting team for me to target for late relievers in draft champions leagues. And I meant to ask you, I was going to ask you before we started recording, like if you could guess what team it was, but
it makes sense if you're speculating, because they should still win baseball games unless they completely blow it up. And they have so many talented relievers. It's interesting.
Yeah. I love this, these options here. So Kyle Bodey, he's no longer with the Reds, but his work with the young arms in that system has me really excited for the guys who recently made their debut or are close. And Kyle's is funny because he's a Northeast Ohio guy. We used to play Magic all the time at the local card shop. So it's cool just to like kind of see like a guy who I knew back then was destined for big things, and now he's got driveline, and just it's really cool to see. But nice. Yeah, I really like this pen. Lucas Sims was fantastic last year. I think he kind of got really unlucky with his injury. You know, he was gaining some momentum in the role. He had like 5 saves in a really short span, and then he got injured. But career high 14.5 K per nine. He had 7 saves, 9 holds, 440 ERA, but the estimators say that he had a 299 FIP and a 255 xERA. So I think he's the favorite for me right now. He's his ADP is around round 25. Definitely somebody I would look into, but a lot of other options you can get much later. I'll touch on a few guys who, you know, may actually be rotation targets as opposed to relievers, but Hunter Green, round 26 ADP, Nick Lodolo, round 33. You know, those are obviously the hyped prospects for the rotation, especially if they trade Luis Castillo or Sonny Gray. But I can't imagine they'll get, you know, 180 innings. So those might be guys who eventually spend some time in the bullpen, or maybe high leverage work if they're trying to limit their workload.
Nice.
Another guy I really like, Reaver San Martin. I don't know how you say it, but I was talking with Rob DiPietro the other day. Just, I don't know what it is about this guy. Just he had a solid debut last year. Both his starts were against the Pirates, though. So
okay,
I can't take too much stock in that. But
yeah, I remember that one now.
Yeah, he could step into a solid 120, 140 innings in the rotation. You know, he's one of the three guys competing for two open spots right now. Round 36 ADP, I'm targeting him there. Really like him a lot. And two other guys who, for saves in particular, to look at are Art Warren and Dory Moretta. Warren, round 45 ADP, Moretta, round 50. Warren had 27 career saves in the minors, made his debut last year, 34-8 K to walk in 21 innings, great ratios. So really exciting. He could certainly step into the saves picture. And he already had a really nice debut. So Moretta also made his big league debut towards the end of last year. He had 18 career saves in the minors, including 8-4. Triple A Louisville last year, so doesn't walk many guys. I really think these guys could, you know, for as bad as Cincinnati's bullpen was last year, I think these guys could really turn things around in a hurry.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that because I like to root for the Reds just because I think they're good, and I just hate how the ownership continues to blow it up, like ruining these good teams. But you get these young arms in there, and it's always exciting because it allows them to keep trading guys, which stinks, but it allows them to stay competitive, which is also good as well, which helps us in fantasy as well. So I'm going to definitely have Warren and Marietta circled on my to-do list later on to kind of dig in on those as well, because that sounds very, very intriguing. Because as much as I like Lucas Sims, I was in on him last year. If they're selling, like, I could see him be going to at some point in time if he does stay healthy. So everyone's available pretty much, unless your name is Joey Votto right now. Maybe Jonathan India. Maybe I'll say Jonathan India since he's the rookie of the year. So we'll leave that one there.
Yeah, and I just actually saw a tweet. I think it was somebody shared it. I think it was Greg Jewett. Shout out to him for all his awesome work at Reliever Recon. Subscribe on Patreon, $3 a month.
There you go.
It's definitely worth it. I'm a subscriber. Yep. He's awesome. His team does great work. But I think he just shared his tweet about Warren. I can't remember the context of the tweet because it was like right before that we started recording. But he was on some sort of pitching leaderboard with, you know, all the elite guys like Hader and Hendricks and Cole. And I'll have to go find that. But yeah, Warren's pretty exciting. Someone I'm really excited about.
Yeah, looking forward to that. But what Ryan did say about Greg and the reliever recon, definitely check that out. As you guys, Greg's been on the show many times. We love what Greg does. So worth every penny. The coffees and closers, waking up to that, worth it in itself. So,
yep.
Cleveland Indians. This is a good one because Emmanuel Clase kind of stepped in and just ran with it last year after everyone wanted Karinchak. It just didn't work out so well. Are we just sticking with Clase and rolling, or are we going to take some chances on some other Cleveland relievers? The Guardians, I should
Guardians,
say.
Yeah.
Yes,
Guardians, yeah.
I totally – I got it's official now. Like, I even love the I think the Athletic did it. It was like baseball team, roller team, shake hands, both the Guardians now.
Yeah, both the Guardians, yeah.
Beautiful.
Class A is, I think, pretty established himself as the guy. Karinchak, just super inconsistent. You know, that sticky band last year really crushed him. You know, he struggled so bad once that band took place and got demoted to the minors. Really 13.6% walk rate. That just doesn't play in the closer role. So I think Class A is one of the most secure closers you can draft. A couple other guys though, who have gone undrafted thus far in DCs, aside from Karinchak, who's going in around round 23, Nick Sandlin and Anthony Gose. Gose is just a fun story. He was a former outfielder. I remember drafting him for steals in DCs a long time ago. Throws gas, 100 miles an hour, lefty. I mean, he probably has a lot of work to do to really kind of ascend the high leverage ladder in Cleveland, but just imagine like the Guardians throwing Gose left-handed 100 miles an hour in the eighth and Clase 100 miles an hour in the ninth.
That's a heck of a 1-2 punch, to say the least.
Yeah, he had a pretty nice debut last year, only 6 2/3 innings, but 92 K to walk, 135 ERA, 060 whip. So it was a really nice debut for him. It's just fun story. Definitely someone to monitor. I don't, you know, I'm not, if anything, it's around 50 pick. But Nick Sandlin was good too. He saved 7 games in the minors. He had a really promising rookie debut, ERA under 3, 34% strikeout rate. So one thing with him is just he's got to cut his walks, 12% walk rate. So if he does that, then I'm sure he'll probably be the setup man for Class A.
Yeah, the Ghost stuff is amazing. Like you said, I remember him playing outfield for the Tigers and just kind of this kind of median guy that you wanted for steals, and now he's out there just pumping heat. Yeah, and it's really just cool. It's crazy to watch it happen because we've seen guys try to do little transitions either from pitcher to hitter, hitter to pitcher, and it doesn't work out very often. So to see him actually do it and make it work has been pretty fun to see.
Yeah, Rick and Keel was the other guy, I think.
And Keel for sure. That one was a wild one because he just couldn't pitch anymore. Just lost all control. The yips to a like, you're a golf guy now. Yips to a T. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But, it was fun to watch. Colorado Rockies. This is a bullpen that it stinks to invest in because it's Coors, but saves are saves as the world we live in. So where are we going here? Because, like, I took a late shot on an Estevez, and I've already been told that was foolish, and it makes sense. But where are you going with this bullpen?
No, I think Estevez makes sense. Bard, he should be the favorite to open that 2022 in the role. if we're just talking late round guys, I mean, take your pick. I mean, any of them. I mean, nobody wants to draft a Colorado reliever. One guy I actually tweeted about recently was Lucas Gilbreth. Hasn't been drafted yet in the Draft Champions Leagues, but just really, really solid after the All-Star break. He 28 innings, 0.96 ERA, 1.07 whip, 30 strikeouts, 3 wins, and a save. So just really promising results. I just love, like, finding random stats like that. Like, over this sample, this guy was just crazy good. And you know, oftentimes that could lead to, like, you know, how you identify, like, breakouts, right?
Yep.
So somebody to monitor. He's the only lefty in Colorado's pen, which may limit his save opportunities right now. But, I mean, round 48 to 50 dart throw. I mean, if you have Estevez, back him up with Gilbreth.
And I like it because Colorado, we see the changing of the guard there all the time, every season. Yeah. So it's definitely – and if Estevez is any good, he'll get traded. So, like, yeah. These are all options in Colorado. Let's go to the White Sox where King Hendricks resides and don't see much change in there barring an unforeseen injury. Craig Kimbrel, we kind of expect to be traded. So what are you doing with this bullpen?
Yeah, it's I mean, Hendricks, obviously the guy. One guy I'm really targeting is Garrett Crochet, ADP 536, which is round 36. His role is still to be determined, could move to the rotation. If he does that, he could open 2022 in the minors. But with Kopech likely to the rotation, Kimbrel traded, could really just see him stepping into a more prominent high leverage role in the seventh or eighth inning. Ahead of Hendricks, so can go multiple innings too. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting decision for them because you know, he obviously proved he can excel as a reliever, and you know, they really kind of babied his innings last year. So are they really going to throw him out there for, you know, 140 innings as a starter this year? I don't know. I think it makes sense for him to just kind of come back to the pen. But if he moves to the rotation, that's, you know, a nice value for a round 36 pick. You know, can get a lot of innings if he does move to the rotation.
Yeah, he's, regardless of where he lands, I guess, role-wise, I think he's going to help you regardless. It's kind of what works there because his stuff is great. And it was like less than 2 years ago, maybe even last year, we were all speculating on Crochet having a big role in that bullpen to begin with. So that makes a lot of sense. If these moving pieces continue to move, he should slide into a seventh, eighth inning type role with potential to, if God forbid something happens to Liam Hendricks, take over there. So I like that a lot. Speaking of Craig Kimbrel, I have to at least ask you, what are you doing with him in drafts? Because you'd imagine wherever he's traded is a team that needs a high-end reliever, but not always the case.
Yeah, it was interesting. I'm sure everybody saw the stat where, you know, as a closer in the ninth inning, he had a great ERA, but in the eighth inning, he had like a 5 ERA or something like that. His ADP right now is 142. So I don't know. He could be a great value at that pick. I mean, you know, obviously it depends on where he goes. Be interesting if he went back to the Red Sox, kind of where he started his career, but. Or that was Braves or Reds. I can't remember. He was with both of them. So, yeah. But yeah, it's, I don't know. He's kind of the first closer off the board after like the top, like, you know, 10, 11 guys are drafted in DCs. It's like really kind of a gap between Romano and Will Smith. And then there's kind of a 50 pick gap. And then Kimbrel starts off like kind of the next tier of closers. So, gotcha. Could be a great value if he lands the closer role somewhere.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. Again, drafted early, you can find a value because if he gets a great spot, he's going to move up quite a bit. So, yeah, definitely could be quite the value, as you said. Let's go to the Detroit Tigers here. We got they had a lot of pieces last year. You know, Soto's got electric stuff, sometimes a little walk issue. Fulmer looked really good if he could stay healthy. There were a bunch of moving pieces, but they're getting better, which could lead to more saves. They still got 42 saves last year, which is definitely respectable in the saves world. It just got spread out everywhere.
Yeah. They really started with the committee and then Soto kind of just, you know, established himself in the role. And AJ Hinch has already come out and said, you know, he's the closer. He's not going to be the full time guy. We'll still use him in high leverage scenarios, you know, in the sixth, seventh, or eighth too. But, you know, all the more reason to target Michael Fulmer. Right now his ADP is kind of in round 19, which I don't know, little early for me, just because I don't think he'll, you know, I really like Soto. I don't think he's probably going to give up the job unless he's just terrible. Who knows, coming off injury, right? Like he had an injury to his throwing hand or his finger or something like that. So, I don't know. Fulmer performed much better as a reliever than as a starter. So I would imagine, you know, they're going to keep him in the bullpen. It just makes a lot more sense. 2.53 ERA as a reliever compared to 4.97 as a starter. So,
and he just can't stay healthy as a starter right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, a return to the pen makes sense, and, you know, 10 saves, 10, 12 saves, just kind of backing up Soto. Like you said, I think he'll get his. So.
Okay. Let's go to the Houston Astros here. Ryan Pressly seems to be the guy, and he seems to kind of always be that underappreciated, should be close to the more elite tier than kind of mid-pack tier closers. And he just kind of sits there in the wings. And you mentioned him, like, you know, I'll take a Class A Pressly to start with, and it's because he's that good. Who else are you looking at in Houston?
Right now, nobody. Just because Kendall Graveman, Yimi Garcia, Brooks Raley are all free agents. They really have to overhaul that bullpen and just get some depth. So I'm not targeting anyone else. I just remember Josh James used to be kind of that guy you'd target just for the strikeout upside and, you know, the bulk relief, just innings. But, you know, he was hurt last year. I'm not sure you can rely on him. Enoli Paredes has some crazy strikeout upside, but walked like 18 batters per nine last year in his limited sample. So
that ain't going to cut it.
That's not going to cut it. So, I mean, if he really cuts his walk rate, I mean, he could be a ridiculous high leverage arm for them, but he has yet to show he can do that. So, right now it's just Pressly in this pen that I'm targeting.
All right. Let's head to Kansas City, a team that loved using committees last year, and honestly, I would be shocked if that didn't change this year. So what are we looking at in Kansas City?
Yeah, eight relievers had a save last year for the Royals. They really kind of used that committee for the first 2-3 months of the season before Barlow gained that momentum and really started kind of being the primary closer. I see kind of a return to a committee here. You know, Barlow, I mean, he's always been – good, but like before this year he was kind of had the four ERAs, you know, ERAs in the fours. So I don't know if he'll revert back to that. Right now he's going in round 12, and I'm not paying that for Barlow. You know, as good as he was last year, I think, you know, the threat of a committee is just too risky in Kansas City. Having said that, Greg Holland's a free agent. Wade Davis is gone. Jesse Hahn's a free agent. Urban Santana's a free agent. So there really should be, similar to Houston, a relief overhaul to complement Barlow, Stammer, Jake Brents, Dylan Coleman. Those are their, you know, the guys that are kind of be all in the mix for saves, I think. Stammer kind of mid-20s ADP right now. Ran hot and cold last year. Price is probably still a little bit too early for me. But he really had a nice end of last season. Over the final 3 months, he had a 1.93 ERA. So it's just right before that, he had a 5.09 ERA over 2 months. So it's just, you know, establishing that consistency. Dylan Coleman, round 47 ADP, had 12 career saves in the minors. He had nice rookie debut, strikeout upside. Could see them going to him if they don't really sign anyone flashy. I could see him being in the mix for, you know, a handful of saves. And Jake Brents, going undrafted right now. He had 13 career saves in the minors. Had a couple for Kansas City last year. He's the team's top lefty. So out of anyone, aside from Stammer, if I'm targeting late, it might be Brents.
Yeah, at worst, he should get the high leverage spots, which could lead to maybe a win here and there, which could be good too. So I like that call with Prince. That's one thing people need to also remember. It's like, okay, I'm taking these chances late, hoping for saves, but it also means they're probably going to be in the late innings, which could lead to wins and other ratio games. So,
yeah, it's so big. And it's so tough to like project right now, right? It's so early. Yeah. Like, but one thing I'm looking at is like who's free agents, right? Like, okay, so Kansas City and Houston, perfect examples. Like, ton of guys are free agents that were, you know, relievers for them last year. So if they don't really make too many moves in free agency, you know, these guys will ascend that high leverage ladder and fall into saves, especially in committees like Kansas City.
No, I like that quite a bit. Let's go to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who just signed a starting pitcher, has thrown two innings in the last 2 years, so $21 million. We won't talk about that today, but that was an eye-opener to me. We will talk about their bullpen, who Rossio Iglesias is just the man. And I'm still shocked Cincinnati traded him when they did, but they did. And there's rumors that the Angels might trade Iglesias, which I don't ever see happening with they just signed Thor. So what are you doing with the rest of this bullpen?
I think they were, the Angels made a qualifying offer to Iglesias, which he has to accept or decline by tomorrow, right? So
yes, exactly. Yeah.
We'll see if he's going to be a free agent soon, but beyond Iglesias, I already mentioned him, Mike Mayers. He was demoted from his high leverage role last year. He had a period where he struggled, but he really came out strong at the end of last season, finished with a 2.78 ERA after the All-Star break. K rate's around 30%, so he has all the makings of a to step into the role if you know Iglesias is moved or gets hurt. So he's really the only one I'm targeting right now, but maybe Syndergaard, you know.
That would make more sense than starting. Like, I like Thor. I feel so bad when I tweet something or say something because I love Thor. I want him to be good. I really do. I was shocked by the money. And the Mets get a pick. Oh, yeah. Like, I literally tweeted out, the Mets didn't have to pay $18 million for him, and they got a pick in compensation. This is the most anti-Mets thing I've seen in a long time. Like, this is perfect. So I wish the best. I would love to see a healthy Thor with a healthy Trout and an Ohtani. That would be electric. That would be great. Yeah. I think I figured it'd be like a 2 or 3 year deal where like, okay, the early years are cheap and then you can earn more money because I don't think he's going to throw that much this year. So I was just shocked.
Seeing all these contracts kind of makes me question like my life decisions, right? Like I should have just focused more on baseball, like learn to throw left-handed, five ERA, I'll get me $77 million.
Yeah. Well, I started thinking that when I saw Jamie Moyer pitch in our younger years. Like that guy pitched forever because he was left-handed and was quote unquote crafty. So we made some poor decisions. That's for
sure.
Yeah,
we did.
but we're going to sit here and talk about relievers anyways. The Los Angeles Dodgers. I love Kenley Jansen. I do. And I'm still in the camp that thinks he's going to come back to LA. It's just too perfect. It'd be too weird to go somewhere else. And I just don't see it happening. Could be totally wrong.
That would be weird.
I feel like he's coming back.
Yeah, I think he's a favorite to re-sign with the Dodgers. If he doesn't, I still think, you know, he's going to close no matter where he goes. He's got a 10-year track record of elite, production, in the ninth inning. So he's one of the best values, I think, right now in draft champions. I think ADP is around 90-something. Let me pull it. An ADP 92, which is round 7.
That's outstanding.
Believe it or not, I think him and Chapman, who has an ADP of around 89, end around 6. I mean, I would love starting my team with, one of Class A, Presley, Chapman, Jadson, Will Smith. I mean, those are guys, I think are locked in. So, but in the scenario where, he doesn't re-sign with the Dodgers, Knebel and Joe Kelly are both free agents too. So, that leaves Blake Treinen, ADP 268 right now, round 18. Went as early as pick 149, which is round 10. Could be just insane value if, Kenley doesn't re-sign with them. I mean, he really kind of got back to that elite form he showed with the A's in his breakout season. Just some of the sickest pitching ninja clips you'll ever see on his sinker, cutter, whatever he throws. that could be end up being a really good value. And like I said, I was starting him last year on my draft champions team. So last year, one of my DCs, I just drafted the entire Dodgers bullpen behind Kenley Jansen.
Not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I was like Knebel, Trinan, and Gratterall.
Well, if they're going to win 100 games, you're locking in probably what's – well, they had 56 saves, so you locked in pretty much every save.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, but another guy to watch, round 44 ADP, Alex Vesia. He emerged as the Dodgers' top lefty last year. 2.25 ERA, 0.98 WHIP, just over 12 Ks per nine. His 17.8 swinging strike percentage would have ranked among the leaders if he qualified. So just a lot of upside there. Does need to improve his control. He walked about five batters per nine to really kind of take the next step forward. But I see him going in a lot of DCs, and you know, he could do worse.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I hate liking the Dodgers, but that's what they do. They win games and they get saves, and it's fantasy baseball. So
yes,
this is where we live. I've rostered Kenley Jansen probably like five straight seasons. So if they're gonna win, I might as well get some joy out of it. The Miami Marlins. This is always a tricky one because similar to the Orioles, like how many saves are they going to get? That's always a question. I still think they're gonna be better than they look on paper. But always moving pieces there. So how are you assessing this?
Yeah, I haven't looked at a Floro's contract, but I would imagine he's going to be the favorite to kind of start the year in the role, and they kind of establish him. Funny, we were just talking about Vesia because they were flipped for each other at the beginning of the last season between the Dodgers and Marlins. Floro in his second year of arbitration, so yeah. This season. So, I mean, it's possible they just start him in the closer role, build up his value some more, trade him, move on to Anthony Bender. Bender's the guy I'm targeting in DCs right now. He's got around 26 ADP. He's kind of going in the Sewold, Chad Green, Lo Iciga range of kind of higher end relievers, in DCs. Began his career going 21 straight appearances without allowing an earned run. Had three wins, three saves last year, great ratios. Like I said, should be in the mix for saves, but not really expecting an extended run in the role just yet. Still think Floro kind of opens in the role unless they sign someone. But as it stands right now, I would go Floro, try to build up his trade value, trade him, and move on to Bender.
I like it. Hope that's something that Derek Jeter and company are listening to, or Michelle Ng, I should say, are listening to. The Milwaukee Brewers, Josh Hader is the dude. I laugh every time they say he's going to get traded, but then the Brewers, and nothing puts me past me. But I love Hader. There's nothing not to love about Hader. You going anywhere else with this bullpen?
I mean, Devin Williams got the first three saves of his career last season. And I think Hader was on the COVID list. For a little bit, and both Williams, Suter, and Boxberg got saves in his absence. But yeah, Hader's getting pricey. I mean, if the Brewers fall out of contention at some point, I mean, there's always a risk of them moving on, and they already have an elite reliever who's, you know, won NL reliever of the year, rookie of the year in Devin Williams. It's just, you know, he really hurt that team punching the wall, celebrating their NL Central title win. I'm sure they could have used him for the playoffs, but
yeah, probably.
Struggled to start last season too, but he had eight wins, 23 holds. So I think he's, you know, really solid target. And like I said, if Milwaukee falls out of it, which, you know, their starting pitching is just fantastic, so. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but you know, he could easily step into that role.
All right, let's go to the Minnesota Twins here, where they've had a lot of moving pieces as well. They traded some guys off last year. We know Duffy's got some electric stuff, but where do you go? Because this legit could be a bullpen that you can get some late targets on.
Yeah, I thought Taylor Rogers would go a lot later. He was somebody before drafts even started that I really kind of liked. and I don't actually have him on the grid right now, but you know, everyone drafting now is pretty smart, so he's not really falling as far as I would have expected him to. But in terms of late round guys, I really like Jorge Alcala. He really closed out the year strong last year, between August and October. 18 and two thirds innings, 0.96 ERA, 0.64 WHIP, 24-3 K to walk. So, I mean, that's really elite. So round 39 ADP, he's definitely somebody that I would kind of prioritize on the higher end of guys I'd be looking to target. Duffy's in his final year of arbitration, so, you know, maybe they give him some chances, and similar to some other guys we've talked about, you know, they try to trade him after some time in the role, try to build up his trade value. So I don't know. I just think Alcala, Taylor Rogers are two guys I really like and could provide a lot of saves.
Yeah, I've started to slowly see that Alcala name. So let's hope he stays later in drafts. I'd be a big fan of that. Maybe I'll have to be a little more aggressive on him when in these leagues where I need saves, because I could see that happening in Minnesota. Duffy, I could see easily getting traded in that scenario. So that could be a fun one too. The New York Mets, Edwin Diaz, he still gets the job done. People like to clown on him from time to time, but he's good. But the secondary options here, even if they don't get saves, can really help a fantasy team. So what are we looking at in New York?
I'm really just looking at Trevor May. You know, Seth Lugo used to be one I would target quite frequently in prior seasons. I think May's just established himself as the next man up. 7 wins and 4 saves last year, career high 68 appearances. He always has a really strong K-minus walk percentage. His 15.8 swinging strike percentage was among the, you know, near the top of the leaderboard there too. So, you know, I think it's just May for me, around 41 ADP. And then everyone else, I'm just not really interested in.
All right, let's go to the Bronx, the New York Yankees. Chapman, he's still the man. He didn't have his elite year, but still a very, very good year last year. Like you said, if you can start out with Chapman at his price tag, that's still pretty darn good. But there, you know, he doesn't get every opportunity. They kind of take care of him to make sure he's there for the postseason. So who else are you looking at in this bullpen?
Yeah, it's Loay Siga and Chad Green. Both guys really stepped up huge last year for the Yankees. They were big reasons, you know, they made the playoffs, just because, you know, at the point they were making their run, Chapman was really struggling really bad. He went on the IL and those guys had to step up. So both of their ADPs are a little bit before round 30, though I see you guys in round 24, Green round 28 right now. I do like Green as kind of, you know, you want to get innings, right. You know, 80 some innings last year. A lot of strikeouts, low whip, you know, I think 10 wins, 6 saves or something like that. So he's definitely one of their highest leverage relievers. Definitely somebody I'd be targeting in that range, for sure.
Yeah, I'm a big Loay Siga fan, so I'm with this Yankees bullpen because lots of wins come from these guys as well. So yep. big fan of that. Oakland Athletics, revolving door. You mentioned Chafin, and I think he's a free agent this year, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Lots of moving
pieces. Chafin, Romo, Diekman, all gone.
So really, barren bullpen. So what are we doing here?
Yeah, Trevino, I think he could be a great value for saves for the first few months. He's arbitration eligible for the first time. I could see Oakland selling off. I mean, if they're already talking about trading Matt Olson and, you know, some of their higher end players, I could see Trevino being part of that. So I don't know. They have a new manager coming in, so we don't know who that is yet. Melvin only used 5 pitchers for saves last year. Really depends on who they sign. I really obviously expect them to be kind of on the cheaper end of the free agent market, but, you know, maybe someone like Boxberger out of, you know, a veteran that can kind of step in to the role to kind of complement Trevino. But he had kind of a weird season too. Like he like really struggled for a while, like I think 5 innings or something like that. He gave up like 13 earned runs, and then over the rest of the season didn't even give up that many. So, it'll be interesting to see like who starts the year as the closer. Trevino's ADP is reasonable. It's around 22. So like I said, I wouldn't expect a full year of saves from him. And again, it really depends on who they sign, but he could be a good value for, 15 saves.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one because there's going to be some random Oakland guy that shows up and that does it because it's what they do. It's just what the A's do. And I don't know if I'm willing to take gambles on who that one's going to be. So
yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
Let's go to Philadelphia. I've always been a Jose Alvarado fan. Last year, things didn't go 100% as planned, but he still was kind of effective at times. We got some openings in this bullpen. So how are you looking in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I'm with you on Alvarado. Around 38 ADP, if you can tolerate a high whip, you'll get the handful of wins and saves. Last year, he had his career best velocity, 99.4 miles per hour. So just also came with a career worst 18.5% walk rate. So, I don't know. Philadelphia, they're likely to sign a closer, trade for one. So, I don't know. Alvarado could fall into some saves, but I think the more likely scenario is, they go after someone like Kimbrel or one of the.
This feels like the Kimbrel landing spot if there ever was one. So,
they tried to trade for him, I guess, before the White Sox did.
Would have been much better than Joe Kelly.
Yeah,
or not Joe Kelly. Might I say that? Kennedy, Ian Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
Much better than Ian Kennedy.
Both of them, yeah.
Yeah, either one. It would have been better than either one of them for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go to Pittsburgh where, Chris Stratton had his moments, Bednar had his moments, Rich Rodriguez out of town now. Where are we looking at in Pittsburgh? Because if one of these guys pitches well, they could be gone too.
Yeah, this one's an interesting one because Derek Shelton used only three pitchers for saves last year. It was Rodriguez and then Stratton and Bednar. Bednar, clearly their highest leverage reliever, 32.5% strikeout rate. His K minus walk was among the leaders among qualified relievers. Swing strike percentage was among the leaders. He just had like a ridiculous run from July through October, 30 2/3 innings, 0.88 ERA, 0.82 WHIP, 39 strikeouts, 8 walks. So I do think he's going to get a good share of the save opportunities, but I think he's more of that high leverage role, eighth inning, seventh inning, let's get out of a jam type guy. They don't want to, raise his cost too high yet. But I definitely think he's kind of in the mix for the lower end of double digit saves, whereas Stratton probably more likely to kind of open the year in the role. He was pretty effective in it. He was a converted starter. He was among the league
former leaders,
in innings pitched among relievers last year, being the converted starter. But he's second year arbitration eligible in 2022. One more year of arbitration before he becomes a free agent. So he's another one of those possible trade candidates to monitor. But if he does get traded, that means more opportunities for David Bednar.
Yeah, Bednar is the guy that I thought he was going to run with it last year, and he kind of did. Got banged up a little, Stratton slid in, and worked out, obviously. But
Of course, Pittsburgh's second worst save total with only 25. So
yeah, I don't see that. Thing to remember. I don't see that changing much this year either. Like they don't seem to be making the right moves to improve on that situation. San Diego Padres, a team with quite the conundrum, but Melanson out of the way this for now. We didn't expect that last year either. But there's so many options in this bullpen. Where do you kind of want to take some chances?
Well, so there's not, I thought the same, but there's not as many options as I thought. Melanson declined his half of the mutual option, so he's a free agent. Daniel Hudson's a free agent. Keone Kella, free agent. Pomeranz tore his flexor tendon last August, so he is not likely to enter the mix. Emilio Pagan gives up too many homers, so I don't know if he's fit for the role, even though he previously closed for the Rays a few years ago. So really, this is kind of an interesting bullpen to target right now in early drafts because, they haven't made any free agent moves. If they don't, really like Pierce Johnson, he's basically free around 49 ADP. you know, good K rate, 3.22 ERA, 58 and two thirds innings, 77 Ks. So another guy would be a lefty, Tim Hill. He's not as flashy in the strikeout percentage as Johnson is, but he pitched a career high 59 and two thirds last year. So those are the two arms I'm monitoring now. Both are free. Both could be extremely good values depending on what happens over the next couple months.
Yeah, I'm imagining they're going to bring someone in. It'll be interesting to see what they actually end up doing in San Diego. Let's go to Seattle, where there's always moving pieces. There's people that are becoming off the IL in the coming season. There's so many things going on, but they finished the year with Streckenrider doing well. We know Paul Sewald's deal. Castillo's there, which was an interesting trade. Lots and lots of pieces in Seattle. So how do you break this one down?
Yeah, Scott Service stayed true to his committee all year. Can you name the eight relievers that got saved for them?
Well, that was three of them. you have Graveman, of course, got four. And then after that, no.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know Keenan Middleton was got a few.
Yeah,
good old I don't Keenan remember Middleton. The other ones either. So that's kind of why I posed that question.
And then they get Ken Giles back this year, right?
Right. So that's who I was going to mention. I expect, you know, the committee to grow even more this year with Giles returning and Andres Munoz returning, another 100-mile-per-hour flashy upside. So Sewald's second rider kind of go in the mid-20s right now in DC's. I might avoid that price. There's still a lot of great hitters in that range and great starters that I would just rather have. And I didn't even follow my own advice in the 50 because I grabbed Sewald. But, Giles was an elite reliever for years before he got hurt. So I imagine him, you know, he'll definitely be part of the mix with Sewell, second rider, Castillo.
Yeah, and then Munoz, like you mentioned him too. My goodness, he got in from San Diego in the Ty France deal. And, Ty France came with him, I should say. And Munoz lights out stuff in that arm. Like, he could be a future closer as well if he can stay healthy. Like, my goodness, that could be quite the group they have out of that bullpen. Really scary stuff if they actually get it going in the right direction. Yep. The San Francisco Giants, Camilo Duval, was amazing to finish the year. I'm still, as a Giants fan, thinking it's still going to be kind of a committee with Jake McGee. I'm not going to completely throw that one out the window with the way Kapler does things, but we'll see. He kind of threw it out the window towards the end of the season, but I'm still a believer in that. How are you looking at this bullpen?
I'm drafting Duval. Yeah.
he's a beast.
He's so good. He really struggled when he got first called up. Gave up four home runs in like 10 innings. But, you know, made some adjustments in the minors, came back in September, went 4-0, three saves, 14 and a third scoreless innings. He was their closer in the playoffs with everyone healthy. So I just think, I don't know, you might be right with McGee. I mean, and Rodgers both returning for 2022. McGee was fantastic last year. He really, he went like 2 months without allowing an earned run. But just remember with McGee, he means like a one pitch pitcher. I mean, he throws fastball.
It's terrifying. Trust me. Terrifying to watch.
He really had a sharp decline in his strikeout rate last year compared to 2020, but doesn't really walk many guys. His experience in the role, I think, you know, he'll kind of supplement Duvall. But one thing with San Francisco, obviously, they're going to win a lot of games, so there's more save opportunities to be had. So even if Duvall shares a role with McGee at some point, you know, he could still finish with 30 saves. So,
yeah. And let me clarify, Duvall is the guy. I think it's like a 70-30, 75-25 thing. Like, it's not a 50-50 by any means. So it's probably more in line with what most of baseball does now. It's probably more in line with what the Dodgers will do with Kenley Jansen. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah, by no means, like, I still think Duvall is by far the guy. I've heard some people go, oh, no, like, he's going to get 100%. I'm like, no, not with this situation. Trust me, not the way they run things in that place. So won't be perfect, but it'll be pretty awesome. I'm with you.
Yep.
St. Louis, Giovanni Gallegos. This was a fun discussion with Paul Sporer at FPAS, and it's been kind of an ongoing discussion in different conversations. The stuff is ridiculous, as you mentioned early on, but it's St. Louis. You know, what are we going to do there? So how are you approaching this bullpen?
Yeah, I want to get a share of Gallegos early on. I just think, you know, he's been so good for so long. Just whip, like 0.08 whip for several years, 3 ERA. You know, he's been a high leverage reliever for years. And, you know, he had like 14 saves or something over the last like month and change or something crazy. When they went on that crazy winning streak, Gallegos was a man. So Alex Reyes and potentially Jordan Hicks moving to the starting rotation. So it doesn't leave many people left if they, you know, stay true to that. Genesis Cabrera, he was among league leaders with 28 holds. He's basically free around 49 ADP. But I don't know. I think this is Gallegos' show unless they sign someone like Melanson or a veteran. And, you know, I think Gallegos, in terms of volume, when you compare to guys like Chapman, who hasn't gone over 60 innings in like 5-6 years, versus Gallegos, who's been in the, you know, 75-80 range for several years now, I mean, that's significant volume that you want to kind of add to your, you know, more opportunities too.
It's a good point. Very, very good point. And every time like I talk to somebody about Gallegos, it makes me open my eyes more and more to what I was not paying attention to, apparently. So yeah, he's very, very good.
I know Sporer took him really early in your draft in FBAS. Yeah. In the draft champions, he went his highest pick, at least the four that have been completed thus far. Highest pick 55, which is round 4. His ADP is 84, which is more like round 6. But I could see him moving up. I know some people are just not on him at that price at all, but I could see him definitely paying that off just because he's just proven that he's been an elite reliever for years. So,
yeah, no, and I agree with you because the more I've looked at him, I'm like, wow, he's actually is outstanding. He's very, very good. I don't see that changing anytime soon. So I'm with you on that one for sure. Let's go to Tampa Bay, where if you ever want to take chances on late round closers, this is probably one of the like handful of destinations because it's always a revolving door. So who are you looking at in Tampa Bay?
Really, for me, it's Andrew Kittredge. I mean, his price is a little, I don't know. I'm kind of undecided right now because in the early ECs, he's coming in around round 22. He definitely was their highest leverage reliever last season. He had 9 wins, 8 saves, 7 holds, great ratios, all, you know, under 2 ERA. Because they're just so extreme with their ninth inning usage, I'm not sure I'll go in there at that price. I mean, if he falls to like round, you know, 28-30, I'd probably be in on it. But there's just so many options in this bullpen. Between rounds, I think Fairbanks went in like round 45 or something in my recent 50. So, I mean, you can have all these guys, you know, late, but it's just so hard to trust. I mean, I think they used 14 relievers last year for saves. So I'm just not going to trust anyone. I mean, there were guys, they were calling guys up from the minors and then like, I think Dietrich Enns got saves and people I've never even heard of before coming in and getting saves. And just like, I mean, how can you target anyone?
You could draft these guys late and you won't even have them in your roster. Cause all of a sudden they get 2 saves this week. You start them next week. They don't get to see a save for 2 months. It's the weirdest rotation that they go through in that thing. It's very, very annoying. But
well, it was strange, too, because Diego Castillo, I mean, 30% K rate for a couple of years. So like, it was just odd that they just moved on from him. I don't know. It was a weird trade. Like, Charguaz,
good. I like Diego.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a clubhouse thing or what, but.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see that move as well. I'm with you on that one. Texas Rangers. Joe Barlow made a lot of people happy last year. Do you go back to him this year? You go to some other options? What do you like in Texas?
I'm not in on Barlow. Round 15 ADP, 222 is his ADP in the early drafts. He really surprised me. I mean, I'll give him credit. He really surprised me. 29 innings pitch, 155 ERA, 083 whip, 11 saves. But he outperformed his estimators by nearly 2 points. Walks are a major concern for him. He walked nearly 6 per 9 in the minors. Now, he did improve that when he got called up, only 3.7 walks per 9. But he's just one where, especially like if the Rangers spend some money, I don't know. I'm not in at round 15, and I'm avoiding. And at some point, Jose Leclerc, Jonathan Hernandez will be back. True. You know, probably not early in the season, but eventually those guys will be back. And those guys are a little bit more established from a, you know, experience wise. So I don't know. I can just see Barlow struggling in the role. I mean, he's obviously the favorite to open 22 in the role. I just won't be drafting him.
All right, let's talk Toronto Blue Jays. Jordan Romano was outstanding this past season. Are you just going to roll with Romano, or are there some other options in Toronto that stand out to you?
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one kind of safe guy, quotation marks, that I'm avoiding in the among the top closers. I tweeted a few weeks ago that I could see Toronto returning him to a more flexible, high leverage role than sticking, you know, committing to them him as their closer. So I don't know. It's his final year before he's arbitration eligible. Obviously the Jays just spent a ton of money on Berríos today. So, you know, historically that front office, hasn't really spent. So I don't know. I just see Romano as, you know, fantastic bullpen arm. I just don't know if he's there for sure closer. And I could see them addressing the bullpen in the free agency, because the bullpen woes in Toronto were a big reason they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, true. It was Romano and like nobody else. Now they did make a lot of moves to address the pen. They acquired Adam Simber. Who else? Brad Hand. They acquired, didn't work out. I don't know. And there's still the threat of Julian Merriweather, who was started the year as a closer, reaches triple digits, just couldn't stay healthy. So he's going around 35 ADP-ish, Merriweather is. So he's someone that's kind of a late target that I'll be looking at, just in case Romano isn't the guy.
Yeah, Merriweather was one of those early, let's spend all our fab dollars on, and then he got hurt. So he's definitely got the goods, like you said, throwing triple digits up there, which is great in that closer's role. So I could see that happen as well. And I kind of agree. Like, I like Romano a ton, but he seems like he could be fit for a high leverage role as well. So, like,
a little bit of health concerns too. Like, he had a minimum IL stint last year, but before that, I think, you know, a couple injury concerns, but I'm sure they would like to keep him healthy as long as they can, just because he's just so good.
And we got to remember Toronto's manager is a former Tampa Bay coach. So we know how they like to handle things. So definitely in play as well. Last but not least, the Washington Nationals, their bullpen got a full makeover last year and had tons of struggles. So, we liked Finnegan. He stumbled to the finish line. Many options here in Washington.
Yeah, the only two guys I'm really looking at in DCs is Tanner Rainey and Kyle Finnegan. Rainey has a round 25 ADP, Finnegan round 28 from the early DCs. I'm really not sure who they're going to go with. I mean, Finnegan was successful in the role for a little bit. Then Rainey came on strong late in the year after he was just awful. He was awful all year. And then spent some time in the minors, dealt with an injury, and then really upon his return just kind of was a completely different pitcher. So if I had to choose one right now, I would pick Rainey. But I don't know. It's very unsettled right now. I'm not really per se targeting these guys. But someone will get saves. Yeah. So could be both of them.
Hopefully it's a lot, because I want Juan Soto to win a triple crown eventually, but we'll see how that goes. Rainey was the guy that a lot of us liked going into last season, or at least was higher up on the list going into last season, and just weirdness took place and Finnegan kind of came in there, but then Finnegan got hurt. So I'd imagine one of the two has a good run for sure. If not, hold on to it. I'm with you. With you on that. But that'll wrap up all 30 teams, Ryan. Any other thoughts on the closing situations going into 2022, things you're focusing on, maybe something else to look at for your DCs?
I think we covered everything. Looking at like contract status is something, you know, just to kind of take a look at, like, just identify guys like even Edwin Diaz is in the last year of his contract and with New York, and you know, what if they suck? You know, he could move on. Obviously he'd probably close somewhere wherever he goes, but it's just something I pay attention to, just because, you know, you forecasting saves right now is just so hard. It's so early. There's so many free agent signings that are going to happen over the next few months. So, I mean, the 80th percentile for draft champions is 67 saves. I mean, do you have to get that many to do well? No. Steve Weimer, I think, finished with 40 some and finished second overall in the DC format last year. So, so for me, I'm prioritizing, you know, one good guy for sure. And, you know, if I can get a guy like, you know, Will Smith or Duvall, even he kind of emerges, then, you know, I'm set. But, you know, you can always fill in late rounds for saves, even if it's not, you know, high number of saves. There's definitely options there just because so many more pitchers are getting saves these days.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I like the idea of go get two studs early if you want to get aggressive and just lock them in. Or there's tons of options, as you mentioned, that you could backfill if you need to. I think most importantly, I've been on this mantra the last couple of years, at least get one of the like top 8 to 10 guys. At least get one guy you know is going to be in a role and then build from there, because that'll lock you in hopefully like 30-ish saves, give or take, and you can kind of make it work from there.
It's tough timing the runs, though, because once the run hits, like as soon as Hendricks and Hader go, and it's like, okay, so once the Chapman, Jansen, Will Smith, Romano range is there, like once one goes, they're all just going, because people know, like, you need saves. I'm going to go get them now. And if you miss that run, then you're stuck with, you know, the Barlows and the Bednars and, you know, perhaps the later round guys. So you really kind of have to hit later on then if you miss out on one of those elite guys. So.
And that's what happened to me in the FPAS draft, is like every time I go, okay, I'll get this guy coming around, and then boom, like three more guys went. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay for this guy in this round. And then next thing you know, he's gone. So it's a wild world out there, folks. So get ready to change your philosophy on some of these players if you want to be, you know, think you're going to feel good leaving your draft. Otherwise, you're going to be playing the game a lot later in rounds, which is fine too, which you can do. But Ryan, we'll wrap it up right there. Once again, remind everybody about all the great stuff at RotoWire before we head on out of here.
Yep, RotoWire Closer Grid. Working on a lot of outlooks right now. It's rotowire.com/baseball/closers, where you can find our new Closer Grid. A lot of new features to look at. All the teams are on there. You can click the team right on the page, see their depth chart, see their usage over the last 7 days, see their stats. So really excited about those, and definitely once the Fantasy Baseball magazine and draft kit comes out, be on the lookout for that as well. There's a lot of hard work going into that, a lot of different contributors. So it's definitely, you know, I'll give it to all the Baseball HQ guys who are working on the forecaster right now, and everyone who's does projections, player outlooks. I mean, it's a lot of work. So kudos to everyone who's putting in that work and helping us guys, you know, prepare for drafts.
Yep. It is a ton of work. It's a labor of love.
We love it.
It's a labor of love. So enjoy it. But as always, Ryan, I appreciate chatting with you, and I look forward to doing it again sometime. Keep up the awesome work over at RotoWire.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 415, late round relievers with Ryan Roof of RotoWire. Catch y'all later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price, and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.